You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. During the coronavirus outbreak, school districts across the country have had to quickly pivot to online and distance learning. And that's caused a wide range of challenges, particularly for students who don't have internet access at home. But for many of the roughly 7 million students in public schools who are receiving special education services, the transition has been even more complicated. It's meant the loss of in-person speech and physical therapy and critical face-to-face learning that just can't be replicated remotely. We asked parents of children with disabilities what their experiences have been like in this moment.
My name is Brittany, and I'm calling from Hickory, North Carolina. I am a parent to a almost six-year-old boy who has autism spectrum disorder and also a couple developmental disabilities and a speech disability. Ever since the COVID-19 crisis, it's been difficult. It's been hard to get him to get into what I like to call the zone to complete his work. He's not interested in doing schoolwork at home.
Parents and teachers of students with disabilities, you can keep calling us to share your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Now, the phrase child with disabilities sounds pretty broad, but it's also a legal term defined under the federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. Here's how John Eisenberg, the executive director of the National Association of State Directors of Special Education, explains it.
It is a term that represents a variety of different disability categories, including things like autism spectrum disorders, intellectual disabilities, vision, hearing. Students who qualify for IDEA have to have a disability and also have to have adverse educational impact, meaning the disability itself has to affect their educational performance in school.
I spoke with John about how different districts have been managing the switch to online and distance learning for students with disabilities. And we were also joined by Sean Smith. He's a professor of special education at the University of Kansas. Sean's research is focused on the use of technology in special education, and he told me that certain online approaches tend to work better for students with disabilities.
Technologies like text-to-speech that are built into a lot of the tablets and computers our students are using, if they have access to digital text, will read it out loud to them, highlight the word as it's being read. There's other technologies that will actually potentially adjust the reading level. There's also technologies that allow students to share what they know in different ways. For example, instead of a traditional essay, they may create a little podcast or a movie or an interactive poster. And those things have been seen as positive things in the online learning environment.
And what hasn't worked as well?
Sadly, there's a bit of a list there. One of the most significant challenges in some of our work that was identified, especially at the elementary and early middle school level for students with disabilities, has been the need of an adult engagement at home. Some of the online schools will call them a learning coach. And I think that's a very good term. A lot of parents in studies that we conducted shared that they saw themselves as a paraeducator or as a tutor or even as a child teacher. And it makes sense. I mean, if you take them into an online home environment, they need to be there to be able to support their child. And it's more than just simply to be there for, an attendant. It's that implementing a lot of the ideas, the strategies, the supports that they generally need face-to-face, and they'll still need face-to-face, but just there at home. So that responsibility of the parent takes on a much larger role than I would argue for some of our students that may be independent readers. These are areas of concern and lead to a lot of identification for our students with disabilities. So the adult in the home is almost a must.
Well, that sounds like a real potential stumbling block if the parent is an essential worker or just needs to be, you know, going to work for economic reasons right now.
What we have found is it might be the grandparent, it might be the teenager, or it may be the fact that they're doing it different hours. They're coming in from work, and so education starts in the evening or education's early morning. It's not during that traditional time because they're at work. And those are things that schools, I think, very much need to realize and plan around, because there's ways to empower parents. There's ways to facilitate what we do at a distance and online that are planful for and designed so that we can reduce that need for that adult to support and reduce the need for the child to be as organized as we would expect, et cetera. But yes, it would be also planned and mindfully planning around the demands of the home as well.
John Eisenberg, this has happened in lots of different districts across the country. And I guess I'm wondering, how has the transition worked? Were school districts prepared? Were some better than others? How'd it go?
I think your second point is probably the most accurate, where it's been some districts have had a lot of experience with virtual education versus some who have had no experience. And then some folks have adopted certain platforms and some didn't even have a platform. So I think it's honestly district by district, a unique experience. I think the folks who have dabbled and have experience in it probably are definitely farther ahead. And this was an easier transition for them. But we are hearing that there's a lot of teachers, a lot of parents and students struggling to make that quick transition. There wasn't much time to do some prep work and to train teachers better, to train the students better, to make sure that the platforms were working correctly and that, quite honestly, everybody had access to the technology and broadband that you need to do those programs. So it's honestly unique by each district to each district.
Does it correspond exactly to money and how wealthy different districts are? Or, you know, are there schools and districts that are doing this well with less funding?
I think the funding is a critical piece that has started to emerge as one of the key discussion items that people are asking for additional needs with Congress. It wasn't heavily in the first round of funding, but there are a number of national organizations like ours and others who now know that we need to plan again for the next time something like this might happen, and that we need to have robust systems in place, and that significant financial resources are going to need to be had. But there are places that have experience using these systems. They are not cheap, and it depends on sort of how the district leadership has looked at investing in these options. Many states have gone in their graduation requirements to add key components where they're requiring students to take a virtual course before they graduate, because they know the modern workforce, you need to be able to use that technology.
Sean, do you have any advice for schools that are still trying to figure out how to make this work or make it work better for students and families?
One, I think, big area would be to focus in from both the district perspective as well as the school perspective to facilitate with our educators, both our related service providers, so speech and language pathologists, as well as our teachers, the big ideas. What's critical? What's essential? And a lot of our students with disabilities are spending the majority of their academic day in the general education classroom, so we want to make that point. And so, therefore, online, they're still working, or at a distance, they're still being taught by their general education teacher. So for that teacher, it may be that, well, I like that lesson, or I like these series of lessons, or we generally cover this content, but when I reflect back to what's really, really critical, what those standards are really asking us to do, and what the big ideas are to make certain everyone knows here before the end of this academic year, let's concentrate on that. First of all, that's going to allow me to declutter a bit. It's going to allow me to realize I have more time to potentially to focus in on those essential elements. And then next, I can look at the venue I have in front of me. And of course, I'm talking about as if we have access to critical digital tools. So we
right.
have actually online learning. And then looking at the tools that are being provided that can help facilitate that.
I think a lot of parents right now are just trying to process, what does all of this mean for my kid this year? Sean, do you have a sense of what the longer term impact of 6 months or a year learning in this way could have on students with disabilities?
Well, that is definitely a concern. As a parent of a child with a disability myself, as well as other children that would be deemed typically developing, there's a reason we have face-to-face instruction. In special education, actually, during this summer, we have something called extended school year, and that's something that all students with disabilities receive. But those that do receive it, it's been shown that they need it because there will be regression if they don't receive that type of support. And while online learning has a number of benefits, and there's a lot of potential positives here, there's a reason we do face-to-face. And so the extended time away as a parent, I think there will be things that we'll have to compromise on. And back to my big ideas, we can focus on certain areas, but there'll be other things potentially, let's say, that speech and language support that is so critical potentially for that face-to-face or the occupational therapy or physical therapy or the adaptive physical education support by the physical education teacher that can really work with my son or daughter with their level of expertise. Those are going to be things that we'll need to catch up on, or we'll need to look at different ways when we're back to whatever the new normal is.
John, there is a provision in the stimulus package that Congress passed that allows the Department of Education to waive some of the federal special education requirements. What do you think about that right now?
As an organization, we have put forth with a number of other organizations, we signed a joint letter with the Council of Administrators of Special Education asking the Secretary of Education not to waive parts of IDEA. We think the word waiver is a bad word, so to speak, and we are concerned about waiving anything that has civil rights protections in it. What we really need is some additional flexibility on some very specific components of IDEA, including some flexibility around timelines. IDEA is one of the most prescriptive federal laws on the books because there are absolute requirements and timelines, and if you don't hit timelines, there are consequences. And there are key components of that where states, there's just no way with the way things currently exist, are going to be able to meet some of those timelines. So flexibility there. And then also on some of the data and documentation that we're required to collect is just not going to be possible during this period of time. And so we're looking for some temporary relief in that area, but not waiving accountability. And then this really third big piece is there are spending requirements of part of IDEA that we're going to need some either flexibility or holds on until all this mess gets sorted out. So we absolutely believe there needs to be flexibility, but first and foremost, it's the health and safety of our students, teachers, administrators, and state level people have to come first. And we're going to need some flexibility in order to survive this in the near future.
Sean, you mentioned your son. He's 19, has Down syndrome. And I'm wondering what advice you have to parents or grandparents, guardians of students who are adjusting to distance learning, online learning, and just kind of getting through this right now.
Well, the first thing I think is to really realize the fact that they have a new role. And that while they've been active with their child, maybe with homework and other types of school support, they're taking on a new role. And therefore, looking at how they can make time for that new role, understanding, reaching out to their educators to determine what that role is going to look like, how can they be more engaged, et cetera, et cetera. The second thing, and that's a big et cetera, et cetera. The second thing to me is that oftentimes as parents, particularly parents of children with disabilities, I think we look to the schools to communicate with us, and John was talking about a number of different meeting obligations and things of that nature, and those are good examples where the district is in charge, and they'll facilitate the process, and we respond to it. In this new online distance education format, we need to be an equal, if not potentially even more proactive, in reaching out and finding times to regularly communicate. I would advocate, based on our research, that it needs to be weekly. Now, it may be phone calls, 30 minutes, or it could be 15 minutes. It would be pre-planned. We have a specific questions we're going to ask, specific questions we're going to answer. It could be for a reason. We're going to problem solve this task. Teacher is going to teach me this so I can model it with my child. But very proactive communications that I don't believe emails, I don't believe text directions from teachers are going to do it for a portion of our population with disabilities. I'm not advocating for this for every single child receiving an education. I don't think that's possible for all our educators. But just like we've had with students with special needs in the past, these periodic unique things would go a long way in supporting those parents and empowering them and being able to support their children at home.
Sean Smith is a professor of special education at the University of Kansas. John Eisenberg is the executive director of the National Association of State Directors of Special Education. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
For parents and teachers of students with disabilities, we wanted to hear from you on this. How are you feeling about your child or student's progress?
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm a parent and teacher in Islip, Long Island. And I have a son with a mild case of ADD. It's interesting to be home with him because I get to see the real impact of the medication that we give him, when it works, when it peaks, and what he looks like when he's working with it in him. and what he looks like when he's done with it and it's kind of worn off by 3 or 4 o'clock.
My name is Lori, and I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia. And I do have a special needs daughter. She is cognitively and physically disabled. And as much as the teachers try to help with the academics, with everything being online, the problem with the majority of our kids is that a lot of their learning is social interaction and very hands-on.
Hello, my name is Eric, and I'm calling from Reno, Nevada. I have a 13-year-old son with special needs. He's on the autism spectrum. We've transitioned to online school with him, and it's real slow going. It's hard just to get through the technical aspects of it and get it to even work right for us right now. The main thing for him that kind of breaks my heart is this socialization aspect of what he was doing at school was so important, the routine and his friends and just getting on that bus every morning and all those interactions with people was almost as important or even more important for him as the academics.
We want to keep hearing from you. You can call us on any topic at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet the show at The Takeaway. If you want to follow me, I'm at Lizzie O'Reilly on Twitter. Also, if you want to check out any of our COVID-19 coverage, you can head to thetakeaway.org/coronavirus. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and this is The Takeaway. Talk to you tomorrow.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.